Hi, this is Carrie Brownstein.
This is DJ Premier.
This is Darren Aronofsky.
You got the RZA right here.
Rose McGowan.
Right here. Ahead.
Aisha Tyler.
Tribe Called Quest.
Fred Armisen.
Fritz Paul.
Javier Munoz. Seth Meyers.
Frankie Cosmos.
Flying Lotus.
Hi, we're Chaim, and you're listening to the Talk House Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Talkhouse Podcast. I'm Josh Modell. This week's episode was recorded live at the On Air Festival in Brooklyn recently, which explains why you'll hear some audience questions at the end. And it features Hamilton Lighthouser and Randall Poster, two interesting guys who were just meeting for the first time. Now, Lighthouser is best known as the frontman for the Walkmen, the New York band that put out a string of incredible records between 2000 and 2013 before going on a hiatus that lasted a decade. They reunited for a tour just last year, and they have some festival dates coming up this year. But Lighthouser kept plenty busy during the band's downtime, releasing three great records on his own, and he's apparently got another one just about ready to go. Perhaps more relevant to this conversation, at least a bit, is the fact that Lighthouser recently got into making music for film and TV. Avid Talkhouse listeners will remember that he was on the podcast last year talking with Ethan Hawke about a Paul Newman documentary they worked on together. Lighthouser's latest project in that realm is music for a doc series that just premiered at Sundance, and he also just finished up his yearly residency at the posh Cafe Carlyle. You may not immediately recognize the name of today's other guest, but Randall Poster has almost certainly played you a song that you love at some point over the past few decades. As the go-to music supervisor for some incredible filmmakers, he's helped set the mood for more than 200 movies. Perhaps most notably, Poster has worked repeatedly with Wes Anderson, a director for whom the soundtrack is massively important. Watch the credits next time you love the song choices in a movie, and you might just see his name. Poster also recently curated a huge 20-LP box set called the Birdsong Project Collection, which you'll hear about in this chat as well. Elsewhere, Lighthouser and Poster chat about their jobs, about other podcasts, including one they had in common called Call Your Grandmother. They get into the story of how Poster got into his unusual job, and Lighthouser talks about a Springsteen cover he recorded that may never see the light of day. He also talks about the time the presence of Christian Bale basically ruined a Walkman show, though he can't quite remember the movie it was surrounding. Guys, it was Terrence Malick's already kind of forgotten film, Song to Song. Enjoy the chat.
All right, it's time again. Hello, everybody. Are you ready for another one? We have Randall Poster and Hamilton Lighthouser. I think this is going to be amazing. We're continuing the music theme. I'm nervous like 1,000 times is one of my all-time favorite songs, Hamilton. So yeah, anyway, give it up for him. Talk House.
So Hamilton and I are just meeting right this very day. So
nice to meet you too, Randall.
I in doing a little bit of research, I saw that you have a film that you scored that's going to be premiering down at South by Southwest.
I believe it's this weekend. Yeah. Long Time Son. It's going to be a four-part series that is going to tear this man and his legacy apart very deservedly, this guy. I don't know how much I can go into it, actually, to be honest. But it is, I don't know how much of it is supposed to be a surprise. But I guess at this point, well, I'll let that go. It's great. The music's amazing.
And have you finished all four episodes? Or
I did. I got way ahead of them. What was fun about this, I've actually done it before, but in this one, I got kind of just psyched, and I kind of work like a maniac once I get going. And I got way ahead of the editor, so I started sending them stuff. So then they started editing to the music, which is sort of like a dream. I saw the final cut of the first episode like last week. Mm-hmm. And the first 10 minutes was like a video for my music, like my five best tracks.
Oh,
and like
great.
Went there, and I was just like, this is great, you know?
That's so terrific.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with it.
And is this the first time you've scored a film?
No, I scored the last Movie Stars, which was a six-part series on HBO that was about the life of Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward.
All right.
And that was the first thing I'd done. And in the meantime, my wife and I have done a lot of podcast scoring, including one where she was working very closely for a very long time with your sister, Meryl.
My sister, Meryl.
On one called Call Your Grandmother.
Call Your Grandmother. Sorry. Okay. Yeah.
That's so we wrote the theme song for Call Your Grandmother.
Oh, wow. That's a revelation. Wow.
Yeah.
Should we call her? No, that's all right.
So I guess your mother would have been on that show, right?
I think she would have been the cause of that show.
Uh-huh. Well, she wasn't the host, though, right?
No. They had
Rita.
They had two hosts.
Do you know Rita?
Just from listening to the podcast.
Rita's amazing, yeah.
But my mother did a couple of episodes, I think.
Wait, what was your mother's name?
Sue.
Sue. Okay, I remember the Sue episode, yeah. Because we did a lot of, you know, tidbits here and there. I did have one other funny coincidence. While we were working on that show, my friend invited me to a Knicks game, and he works for Verve Records, and he, I think, the
Jamie.
Only...
Jamie
Krantz.
Right.
He, I think the only reason he actually invited me is because he found out that I knew Lana Del Rey, and he wanted me to, like, get him her phone number or something like that. I realized halfway through. But we go way back, but I sort of realized, like, that's maybe why. But then I said, God, you got great seats. He said, oh, no, these aren't mine. You know this guy, Randall Poster? I said, wait, is he related to Meryl Poster? He said, yeah, his brother. And
you sat in my new seats.
Yeah, these are his seats. So those are great seats.
There's a game tonight.
Jamie's got the same number if you feel like calling.
So Jamie, I was thinking about that. So Jamie, he played with you, right, in the Walkman at some point?
No. Oh, one time on stage he guessed it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But you guys go back to D.C.
Childhood. Yeah. Very.
And I was thinking about, you know, artists, let's call them contemporary artists who segue into film scoring. And among the most successful collaborations, at least creatively successful collaborations I've had, are both with Nathan Larson and Craig Wedren, who were from DC, of course. And
I didn't know that.
And were on Discord Records. I'm blank. Shudder to Think. They were in the band Shudder to Think.
Right, yeah.
And I just was wondering, was that on your radar at all when you were?
Of course.
Yeah.
I was a little bit young for the big DC scene, mm-hmm. but my dad was friends with Don Zinterra from way back before I was born, who was the guy that opened Inner Ear Studios
right,
and recorded the first Minor Threat and Bad Brains and that
right,
kind of stuff.
Right.
So I do have one of my earliest childhood memories is being in Don's basement and having these like skinhead kids around and just thinking they were the scariest people I'd ever seen in my life.
Right.
And of course it was like those guys doing their records, which is really incredible. Where are you from originally?
From here in New York City, yeah. Born and bred, New York City.
And I did a little research and was reading that you are a big bird watcher.
Well, I can't say that I'm a big bird watcher, but at the start of the pandemic, I created a project called the Bird Song Project. I'm a big bird song lover.
Okay. Bird listener?
Yeah, bird listener. And I had a friend of mine who's a very committed environmentalist out in LA who I've worked with. And we were talking about how the city being so quiet, everybody was sort of more aware of the birds and the bird life around us. And she basically just said, here's what you do. You reach out to your music community, get people to write music incorporating bird song, and we can celebrate both the joy and beauty of bird song and also draw attention to the crisis facing bird life in a non-politically charged way. And I thought that was an interesting idea. And it was at a time when a lot of musicians, I think, were eager for an assignment. Everybody was home. And we started, and the response was so hearty that we made a 20 LP box set with 172 pieces of original music. I like to say everyone from Yo-Yo Ma to the guys in the Circle Jerks, with artists and poets reading bird-themed poems. And we put this box set out last year, and actually we won a Grammy a couple of weeks ago.
Congratulations.
So that's really kind of great for the cause.
Yeah. Grammy for the birds.
That's how it happens.
So do you bird watch or is that it? It's over.
No. I was trying to see if I could do a little bird watching right now. But no, we've been doing all sorts of events and exhibitions around the country. So this thing is sort of going on and on.
Why would it be politically charged? Because it would be development.
Well, I think when you say climate crisis.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. You know, so, and if you do what you need to do to protect the birds, it's the same things you need to do to protect the planet.
Right. Of course. Yeah, I have a friend up in the Hudson Valley who's working on trying to develop a greenway that would be like seed and bird and animal migration all mm-hmm. the way through the Hudson Valley.
Yeah.
And it's been tough for him, actually.
There's a lot of work that needs to be done, but I think that if we kind of confront it joyfully rather than apocalyptically, at least it'll be a little bit more fun pushing back.
Right. I thought you were going to be this bird expert. So I was going to ask you, we just got these two bunnies for Christmas. And they're, we also have two cats. So I figured, like, what could possibly go wrong, right? But the cats and the bunnies actually get along now and they hang out in our backyard. And I was going to ask you, what are the chances that some huge bird of prey is going to come down and steal one of the bunnies out of our yard?
Oh, I think it's very, the percentages are very high.
In Brooklyn?
It's very likely that that's going to happen. I would call
you. They're white and on that green, yeah.
Yeah,
that,
I would call home and get them inside.
They're out right now as we speak.
So what have you been listening to lately?
Let's see. I listen to mostly classical music these days. I have a little trouble listening to rock and roll because I spend all my time making my own music. And I spent so many years. I listen to a lot of Igor Stravinsky, mostly non-vocal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
I think lately, like the last couple of weeks, I've been spending a lot of time listening to music from the 1930s. I'm about to start shooting a movie here in town that's sort of set in 1936. So just familiarizing myself with all of the kind of regional bands and
in getting, New York, like the New York regional bands.
No, the film is set in Chicago.
Oh.
So it's sort of some of the Chicago bands or what else was happening and, you know, in on Race Records and, you know, what was sort of the punk rock of trying to see if I can find the punk rock of 1936.
Who are the big 30s Chicago people?
Well, Cab Calloway in terms of like the regional bands, there was race artists that were in Chicago up from Mississippi. So
right, I think a lot of New Orleans
blues component. But Cab Calloway really is the sort of big star of the moment. Right. Benny Goodman is playing.
And Cab Calloway had a bunch of people in his band who branched out, right?
Dizzy Gillespie
was
in his band in like the 40s. Cab Calloway had a 60-year career.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's an amazing guy.
Hamilton, in your experience where you're promoting music, where you may have been stopping at radio stations to do interviews, do you find now has podcasting stepped in and become more of a priority, say, than...
Yeah, most definitely, but very much it's definitely followed the trajectory that I think a lot of podcasts have been going these days, where like there was a time 5 years ago where every single person I knew was like, I got this podcast, would you come, you know, and there's nobody did any research, nobody did any, had any angle or, you know, just nothing. They just thought they could sort of turn it on, hit record, put it on, and people were going to listen to it. And it seems to me like finally, I think it's whittling down, right? It sounds like a lot of people got fired from a lot of companies.
I guess my impression of it, and I've done a few podcasts in the course of work, you know, trying to get the word out on some projects, that somehow like last year, there's a period where podcasts seemed to me like it was an antique term. And yet now it sort of seems, and maybe this is somehow related to the constriction of the society of podcasters, but I feel less turned off by the term podcast this year.
Well, yeah, I didn't like the word when it came out. I didn't like saying the word podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt too dorky. I just couldn't, I don't know. It took me a while. I would sort of use all other terminology that didn't make a lot of sense. But I got over that.
Yeah. I like the term serial. I was using that as a serial as being...
But then it became last, but a podcast.
No. When I thought podcast sounded like it was...
Like an iPod ad or something?
Or like a Walkman. You know, it was on its way to becoming like a Walkman. I started to use the word serial. It's a serial, not a podcast. But now podcasting, time moves on and you find yourself.
There's a lot of great ones. I listen to them to go to sleep. So I fall asleep every night to someone talking to me. And I miss, 90%. That's why I can't do the audio books. I love reading. I read a lot, but the audio books put me straight out. And then I don't know where I was when I can't flip the page back and all that stuff. But there's a lot of good ones out there. My wife makes a lot of great ones. Call Your Grandmother. Check it out. How did you decide that the music supervision was the position, the place you should be? Or was that decided for you?
No. So I graduated from college without, I don't know how it happened, but with no real plan in mind, really, and realized that I better do something or else I was going to compromise myself in a way that I was unsure I would be able to recover from. which meant going to law school. And so I wrote a script with a friend of mine about the college radio station. I went to Brown University, and they had a very prominent radio station, WBRU. And when I started, it was this freeform station, student-programmed, or DJ-programmed, and then it became a proper commercial radio station that ended up being sort of a real starting point for a lot of people who went to work at like MTV and in that world. And it was really about the crushing blow the election of Ronald Reagan gave to the sense that the youth movement had somehow turned the page, which we now know was not true. And so we wrote this script and somehow got it around to some people who wanted to buy it. And we decided that we wanted to make it. And so long story short, we were accepted at the lab in Sundance, and we made this movie. It was called A Matter of Degrees. And we had all sorts of bands of the moment, 11th Dream Day, Yola Tango, Lemonheads, Sonic Youth, Alex Chilton did songs for us.
But you mean you called them before, you just had a script and you just called them up?
Well, we were making the movie, and you know, I generally spent my nights going to see bands and started to talk to some of them. The Minutemen were actually Mike Watt and Dee Boone were the first guys that said, yeah, we'll do a song. And we made this movie. We put a soundtrack out on Atlantic Records, and the movie came out and played at festivals around the world, but really didn't do very much. And I realized at that time that, you know, I'd put the music together that I really wanted to work with great film directors, and that if I made music my area of expertise, that would be the point of contact. And it worked out by virtue of being connected to my peers who were making movies. And that was like 200 movies ago.
Is it primarily like right there you were like approaching bands that you liked and you were asking them for a song and stuff?
Yeah.
And these days, is it still that kind of thing, or is it like negotiating money versus, you know, I want a Beatles song and that's going to cost 90% of our budget? And
you know, I'm lucky in that I get to work on big movies and small movies, right? So the approach is different on, you know, based on scale or like pure artistic ambition. So I still find myself, you know, if I hear a great song or I hear turned on to a great band, I'm always looking for a way to place them in something right. That I'm working on.
I did a cover for the last movie Stars. We had a scene where Paul and Joanne were really about to get divorced, but then they decided to stay together. So I did Tougher Than the Rest, the Bruce Springsteen song mm-hmm. from Tunnel of Love. And it really worked. And it sat temp in there for 9 months. And then the music supervisor went to get it. And I mean, the boss was not happy that day. And he wanted so much money. Mm-hmm. And that had to go. And it was like sort of a last minute, big moment that we had to swap out. It worked out in the end, but I had to, you know, that was tough.
Did you ever put that out, that song?
No, it's just sitting there.
How Springsteen's actually become a little bit more helpful these days.
Really? That wasn't that long ago.
Oh, okay.
What changed?
You know, I think that they understand, or sometimes it's more understanding that having a song in a movie really can open you up to
a brand new audience. It was a very different version.
Yeah.
It put a very different mood on it.
Yeah.
And it was
and then you just, you know, you should find a music supervisor who won't give up.
Hey, this is Josh Modell, host of the Talkhouse podcast. We love it when musicians come on the show and talk about process, and often they'll get into the nuts and bolts of being a working artist, which can sometimes be fun and sometimes feel more like a business. Well, this episode of Talkhouse is brought to you by DistroKid, which is an amazing service for musicians looking to get their songs out into the world in an incredibly smart and cost-effective way. For the past decade plus, DistroKid has made it easy to get your music on all the streaming services, including Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Instagram, and more. You keep 100% of your earnings minus a flat yearly fee, which is a better deal than you'll find anywhere else. More than a million artists use DistroKid, and the latest version of their app is better than ever. It includes features that make it easy to see your account details, including the money you've earned, as well as to seamlessly edit things like lyrics and metadata across platforms. There's even a feature called Instant Share, which allows you to easily share files with your bandmates, booking agent, playlist curators, and more. Distro Lock allows you to protect your songs. DistroKid users get a YouTube official artist channel, too. The list goes on. The DistroKid app is available on iOS and Android. Go check it out today.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.
Hey, TalkHouse listeners, it's Josh Modell. Instead of encouraging you to listen to podcasts today, I'm here to encourage you to read something great. The particular something I have in mind is the second issue of the TalkHouse Reader, the print zine spearheaded by our fantastic music editor, Annie Fell. This issue is focused on the intersection of food and music, and it features contributions from Maddie Matheson, Coleman Domingo, Squirrel Flower, Sam Evian, The Blessed Madonna, and more. There are pieces about eating while on tour, the gentrification of food, cooking as a creative catalyst, and much, much more. You can order a copy today, along with the first issue, at store.talkhouse.com. Please do check it out.
What was the last time you went to the movies?
God, I don't go very often. We got kids, so like I don't want to go to the movie they want to go to, and vice versa. What was the last movie we saw? We watched the Blackberry movie, which was interesting. But going, I don't know. We go to the Alamo Draft House in downtown Brooklyn because you can order like pale ales and, you know, nachos and stuff. And I'll see, just my standards are so low if they're showing something there. I have a friend that I like to meet there, and if there's anything that I'll even, I could imagine sitting through, I'll go. But it's not easy to find that.
Yeah. Well, it's like when you, I guess my follow-up question was that if you, you know, with when children sort of prevent your ability to go out and go to the movies, I guess my follow-up question is like, when was the last time you ate chicken fingers?
Yeah, this morning I think I had the last one from last night. Yeah. For breakfast. I was just sitting there, cold.
Yeah,
stale.
I know how that goes.
How old are your children?
22 and 24.
Uh-huh.
Daughters.
Uh-huh. I have two girls also, 10 and 12.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Just wait.
Yeah? Really? I don't need to hear. We've arrived at the teenage years already.
Wow.
Let's see. What's your sports teams?
All the New York teams.
Really? I don't like a single New York team. Uh-huh. Never. I went for the Yankees until they won the World Series, and then it was sort of one of those things where Alex Rodriguez was like, yeah, we won. He was like, oh, finally, people aren't going to give you shit for losing again. It's the least exciting thing I've ever seen in my life, so I couldn't do it. I'm from Washington, D.C., so you can't, I don't know, I can't go for like the Giants, and I'm not going to switch to the Jets.
Well, I'll tell you a story going back to my childhood here in New York City is that I played like sports as a kid, as a little kid, and I was on this like peewee football team, and the colors were maroon and gold, the jerseys. And my grandfather bought me a Redskins helmet.
Yep.
And I became a Redskins fan.
Really?
Right? And so
that was probably a good time.
And one day the Giants still played at Yankee Stadium, and my dad had tickets. We were going to go to the game, and I'm in my room and I'm making signs. My father's like, "You're not bringing any signs to the game." So I go to the game and I'm sitting in the stands and I'm started rooting for the Redskins, and all of a sudden I feel a slap on the back of my head. I'm probably 9. Slap on the back of my head. And I reach back and my head is covered in mustard.
Oh, geez.
And I look at my dad and he just says, "That's what you get for rooting against the home team." And that was the day I became a New York
Football Giants fan. Well, I can tell you that I grew up not as a Detroit Tigers fan because my dad is from Detroit. And I didn't really care about football at all, but the Redskins were so good that it was sort of always this background noise. And so when I got a little older, a friend of my wife and I had really nice season tickets, and they let us go. And we went to the 1 o'clock game, and the people that go to the 1 o'clock game get there at, you know, 8 a.m. and are drinking by like 8:30. And so we were in the, we weren't in the cheap seat. We were in like the nice seats. And it was a freezing day and we were sitting out there and my friend had something hit him on the head, but it was actually like about a 65-year-old, well-dressed sort of lawyer-looking guy just throwing up onto my friend, the back of his neck and
nice.
All that.
Nice.
Because he was so drunk.
America the Beautiful.
Yeah.
So I have something we can talk about. So you're beginning.
I thought that was pretty good.
You're beginning a residency at an annual residency at the Carlisle Hotel.
Yes.
Which is a lovely place to see a band. I worked on this David Johansen film that we shot at the Cafe Carlisle. And I really thought it was, you know, it's such a international destination of sorts that when I've seen David at the Carlisle, I always would look around for like the people who came in and they were going to go and see whoever it is that was playing that night at the Carlisle.
Right.
And I wonder when you're there enough to be able to, I would think over the course of the couple of weeks to read the room, and how keen are you on bringing these strangers into your musical world?
The first year I did it, it was when the offer was made, it was so, I mean, I played nightclubs and festivals and I tour around with the rock and roll band. And it was such a weird idea that I thought, okay, I'll try it. That sounds really weird. And I played 10 shows. And by the 10th, people who had bought tickets to see me, but the first five shows were people who were there for the show at the Carlisle.
Right.
And I was heckled on the stage by like a sort of fat cat guy eating his cheesecake right in front of me.
Right.
I can't remember what he said, but I couldn't believe, I was like, this shit happens at the Carlisle, man? Like really sort of giving it to me. And that was weird. And it was very stiff. And I wasn't start spreading the news. I think that kind of caught people off guard. But now it's people who buy tickets to see me. I've done it. This is my sixth time in seven. COVID canceled one, so it's been 7 years now. So now it's my crowd.
That's great. That's
yeah, really it's great. Fun. I feel weird inviting my friends because it's just so expensive to walk in the door there, you know? But they know how to charge. But it is like amazing. I've done similar shows in other cities where I pare it down and we do sort of a kind of like a dinner theater kind of thing. But it's just, in those places, you're kind of just like playing in a restaurant or something, you know?
Right.
If you're not playing at the Carlisle, you're kind of...
Yeah, it's hard to book a club tour like that because there really aren't very many places.
There aren't. You would think there'd be more. There's really not. It really is kind of one of a kind. I mean, it doesn't... Right. Yeah, it's funny. But I'm looking forward to it. Live up there for a couple of weeks.
Right, that's got to be fun.
It is, yeah, it's great.
And you fill the bandstand out pretty well because it's a very small bandstand.
Yeah, we do. I was just texting with the guy yesterday. We have to expand it a little bit for my band.
Right.
And then they sell a few extra tickets to make it a little more rockin' for the rockin' show at the bar in the back. But it's tiny. I mean, that room, that's the point. It's not that much bigger than this room, really. I guess a little, but not that much. But yeah, that's always a good time.
And are you touring after the residency? Are you?
Oh, no. I'm also touring with my old band. We had my band, The Walkmen, which I was in for a long time and still am. But we took a 10-year break and we started playing again recently. So we're playing down in Mexico and some other festivals coming up. A few other things we haven't announced, actually, but not that much. I've got a solo record that I'm working on at home and scoring some stuff, doing some podcasts, actually. Working on a pod, waiting to hear back on a theme we did for a podcast the other day. I got a question for you, actually. This is going to be one. You don't have to answer this one if you don't want. If you're negotiating a licensing sync,
right?
At what point can I ask for more money without worrying about scaring the music director away? What's the breaking point?
Explain to me what you're trying to understand.
They make an offer. You want to double the offer, but you're kind of.
Well, I think that offer, if it's something where you
like the first offer.
Well, I really,
as my lawyer said to me one time when we were going through this horrible housing court thing, he took me out. I said, I'm not here for the money. I'll take whatever. I'm not here for the money. And then he said, Your Honor, I'd like to speak to my client. He took me out in the lobby and he goes, let's get a little more.
Yeah.
I was like, no, man, stay away from me, man.
I want to see artists make as much money as they can on the movies that I work on. And so I would say is that, if it's something that I want to make happen, right, creatively, that I'm candid about really where I can go and, you know, and hopefully over the course of time, the musical community that I've been working with, they appreciate that, like, I will give them the money when I have the money. And, you know, like I said before, thankfully I work on big movies and small movies. So, you know, with recurrent artists and other projects, you know, you give it to them when it really is there.
Right.
And that sometimes you know, you have to, it's the push is what maybe does get you a little bit more, yeah. You know?
Sorry, I just figured I'd have to ask that small ball kind of question.
No. I think that's
my day to day. But I got someone who negotiates for me, but I'm just curious.
I mean, the other thing is that when you're saying about doing music supervision is just really, when I was in school, it wasn't really like a thing to be, right? It wasn't like, right. Oh, and now it is like, I got asked today to talk to a class at NYU Tisch. A class about music supervision. So, I mean, it's now become part of collegiate curriculum, you know,
wow. Or
film school curriculum.
What didn't we cover? I'm trying to think.
How do you feel about the new Billy Joel song? I'd say you don't have to answer that.
I'm happy that Billy Joel released a song. I think it's great. I'm proud of him for doing that. I think it's great.
Good.
Yeah. How about you? What's your answer?
I somehow my allergy seemed to kick back in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so. But I love this story of how, you know, this kid just like sort of prompted him to do it after all these years.
Yeah, it's incredible. Do you like any new bands?
I would say a band that I really love that's the newish band is this band called Dead out of Chicago. D-E-H-D.
What kind of music is it?
Like punk rock. Whatever you want to, whatever terminology.
There's a big death metal, black metal resurgence among like the 18-year-old. What is that? Gen Z? I don't even know what that's called. Like my bandmate's son, that generation.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be sort of becoming kind of national now, actually.
New bands making.
Yeah, like death making metal, like real, like, you know, like Norwegian black metal, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it seems like weirdly that's kind of becoming a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I you know, I did this movie, I don't know if you saw it, but I did this movie years ago called Gummo.
Oh yeah, right? Yeah, I did. Yeah, it's great.
And so the music in the movie was quite eclectic, but we decided as a companion to make like a death metal record. And it really is a point of pride. It's like the only time I think that I worked on a record where one of the artists in one of the bands on the soundtrack murdered one of the guys.
Oh, was it Mayhem?
Side. Yeah. Burzum and Bathory, right? I think that's.
And I think that, yeah, I remember the story. I was interested in death metal for a little while, black metal for a while. Right. I think the guy's name was Dead.
I think maybe you're right. Jonas Åkerlund made a movie about it, which
right.
You could probably see.
I read the book. It has the picture of the burning church on the cover of it. Yeah, it's dark. Mortise, did you ever know who that was? Mortise is this guy, this Norwegian guy. He lives in a cave and wears a prosthetic nose that's like that big and like these big prosthetic ears. And in the book, they say that he was laughed off the island of Manhattan. I don't know the rest of it, but I thought that was pretty great.
What else? What haven't we covered, Hamilton?
We did a dramatic podcast recently called Supreme. I think it win awards or something? Or maybe it was nominated for some awards or something? But I gotta say, I'm really proud of our. We did a really great soundtrack. It's got Maya Hawke and William H. Macy and all these other people in it. And it's about the original Roe v. Wade arguing of the case. What's that?
Oh, that was somebody's.
A fan of Roe v. Wade?
No, I think that was a walkie-talkie, it sounded.
Oh, okay.
Is there another
Anyhow,
question?
Yeah, check it. It's got great performances and stuff. It's kind of interesting because it's. You know, they're reading lines, the dramatic nonfiction, I guess, is that what you call it?
I'm also approaching podcast projects. I'm just curious how you perceive the differences or maybe the complement or the contrasts between those different sort of results.
Well, it's completely different because I'm not singing, for starters. I've always been a singer since I was 15. I started my first band, and we do, you know, mood music. You'll need like there'll be a divorce scene, and you need like a divorce song, or there'll be... You know, or these people the other day wanted like a Dua Lipa song. So we like did the stylized Dua Lipa, which is fun. It's not the creative thing that I love doing, but it's got its own way. And I like recording and I like, mix. I like all the technical stuff. I do my own engineering and stuff. So I like being in the background. I've always been the guy in the front. Always. And I wouldn't give that up. The moment I gave it up, I know I'd miss it. But it's great having a back seat sometimes. Anyone else? Yes. The woman in red.
I'm curious to hear more about the movie that you're working on right now. You said it's shooting.
Yeah, so Maggie Gyllenhaal has a movie called The Bride that we're going to start shooting here in New York in April, beginning of April. And it's quite fantastic. Fantastic in that it's not really rooted in period purely. And what I'll say about it is that Christian Bale plays the monster Frankenstein.
That sounds great. I have a good Christian Bale story. We were playing at Austin City Limits Festival one time years ago. It's a big outdoor thing. And Michael Mann was making a movie. I don't know what the movie was. I don't know if it came out or not.
Was it Michael Mann or was it Terrence Malick?
I don't know.
Okay.
One of those two people.
Right.
Was making a movie starring Christian Bale as like a music producer or something, or executive or something. Do you know this?
I don't know that it ever came out.
Okay. I think it was Michael Mann. Anyhow, somebody can Google it. But the thing was that they had written us beforehand and said, would it be okay if we filmed some scenes during your set that they want to have your band in the movie? And we said, sure, that's fine. And so before we went on stage, Christian Bale came up and he was very sleekly dressed, and you know, he really had his record exec thing, and I think he was in character, and I think he was being filmed at that point or whatever, but there's a lot of people with cameras around, so you don't really know. And so we went on stage and we're playing for about 20 minutes, and then Christian Bale appeared on the side of the stage right here where there's some other people, but they gave him a really prominent spot so he could be filmed, and you could see people in the audience kind of like looking at us and then kind of like, oh my god, it's Christian Bale, or it's Christian Bale. And like 5 minutes later, like the entire audience is like, nobody's listening to the music. Nobody's watching the band. Everyone's just like, oh my God, it's Christian Bale. She's like ruined the entire show. It was a terrible decision. I never would have known.
I wonder, I had this cool experience recently. I took my kid to see Wonka, and I realized the music was done by Neil Hannon, the Divine Comedy.
Right.
And I was thinking about you, Randall, because you brought in like Jarvis Cocker for the Wes Anderson stuff. How do those conversations go when you're bringing in an artist that's really kind of a left field person, not a traditional Hollywood hit maker?
You know, you just sort of have to push them into the pool a little bit, and then I think that, you know, hopefully in movies is that you have to have the head and heart for it, but you also have to have the stomach for it, because it can be so chaotic, and it can be cross direction, you can getting mixed signals and cross directions. So, you know, I think that the if someone has that musical brilliance, that, you know, I think that they stand a good chance of making it through. And there've been some where it's just overwhelming, you know. Anyway, it's been very nice talking to you.
Thanks, Randall. It's nice to meet you.
Thank you all for listening to us. I hope it was okay. And I will be with the band at the Carlisle signing soundtrack albums.
Selling merch. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Talkhouse podcast, and thanks to Hamilton Lighthouser and Randall Poster for chatting. If you liked what you heard, please follow Talkhouse on your favorite podcasting platform and check out all the goodness at talkhouse.com. This episode was produced by Myron Kaplan, and the Talkhouse theme is composed and performed by The Range. See you next time.